Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 30. Though it is too lengthy to reproduce here, the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 2230 very exactly explains why it is that one can realize the full glories of the holy name only by offenseless chanting. Okay. Footnote 7. So this is the extractions from that.
Excerpts.
Footnote 7. Pure self-realization is the pure consciousness of admitting oneself to the eternal servitor of the Lord, to be the eternal servitor of the Lord. Thus, one is reinstated in his original position of transcendental loving service to the Lord. Right? That's what you're trying to get to. So all these other elements of the philosophy and that, like we were discussing earlier, that's just so that you don't get distracted by what's not pure devotional service. Right? Or because of something, then therefore you get a blockage that you can't take up pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So the essential points of that we're servants of the Lord, that is what all the Vaishnava Acharyas would be explaining. But then depending upon what kind of presentation they want to make, then they'll choose certain elements and make that as Brahma. Does that make sense? Yeah. Thus, the stage of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord without any hopes of emolument. Is that what you said?
Yeah, emolument.
Emolument from the Lord can be attained when the material senses are purified and the original pure state of the senses is revived. Perfect purification of the mind is made possible when one is fixed in the conviction of being the eternal servitor of the Lord. Right? Because what we're saying here is that the perfect purification of the mind, because remember, the mind is the one that's controlling the whole thought process. Right? It means you have mind, intelligence, and false ego, but mind is the one that's the bigger picture. Intelligence and false ego are actually sections of that. Right? The whole thing together means you have this section that's mind, but the whole thing together is how the whole process is working. Right? Yes.
It's a refutation for what they say, that you can chant the holy name because
they're saying there's no need to distinguish between pure name, offensive name, and nama bas. You don't have to worry about that. You just, if the bab is there, then naturally everything happens. So then what's being pointed out here is that you can actually know only the full glories of the holy name and of the Lord if one is in that purified state, one is chanting offensively, one is chanting in pure Shuddha Nam. Does that make sense? Because that's the whole idea, that's why the criticism there is the Hajj. It's just, if the mood is there, then everything's good. But the point is yes, the mood is important and it's the prominent, but you must use your intelligence. You must do things in a particular way, right? Does that make sense? There must be that process of trying to do things in a correct way, right? It's not enough that you are simply trying to just express yourself, but that expression is how you feel, not necessarily how it's recommended you feel. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, one goes to a formal program, okay? Now, the adults are all sitting there. You know, they may get bored or this or that, but they still sit there, right? Now, the kids, what happens when they get bored? Right? They want to go do something else. They start making trouble, this and that. Right? So, is it actually... But the point is if we look at it, no, it's just the natural, pure expression of the child, you know, just how he wants. So, why are people upset? Why are they criticizing? Why do they say he should restrict himself? No, it's just a pure, natural expression. You understand? Because the natural expression has to be in line with everybody else, with the intent of that association. It has to follow some form, otherwise how do you call it a society? Does that make sense? So the sahajiyas are just saying, no, it doesn't matter. It's just if they have the mood, that's all that matters. Because even if someone's doing all the nastiest things, if his mood is there, then, you know, it's a nice thing in that one appreciates, okay, someone is abhichet sudaracharo. So he's situated in devotional service, but at the same time there's some attachments to things that aren't nice. But the point is he knows that. That's the difference. He knows that. It's his problem to work out, not for us to sit there and criticize. So that's meant for us, not it's meant for the person. Do you understand? The person thinks this is wrong, but, you know, somehow or another we're unable to get it all together. But we know by the grace of the Lord that eventually will, but right now it's not ideal. But others are then, oh, but he's still insanely. You know what I'm saying? In other words, everybody should know what part they're playing. Because the normal thing is one wants to reverse it. Right? That's the thing. You know, the common people are telling the government how they should run things. You know, and, you know, it's just, you know, but how does that work? You know what I'm saying? So here is taking the element that it doesn't matter. Like that, you know, it's the intent, that's the point. And then I'm taking that for myself. So therefore it doesn't matter, you know. And then others will do, and so they can put on a whole sentimental element. But because it is sentimental, sentimental generally means you want an experience, which means you put yourself at the center. You know what I'm saying? So we're not talking here actually about something sincere. Because otherwise, then proper devotional service and everything, as recommended by the Lord, would be the method. But no, it's just the mood. But Krishna doesn't say it's just the mood. The point is yes, the mood is what's important, but the mood has to be expressed through a form that is socially compatible with the Vaishnava environment. Does that make sense? Yes.
So then for Maitya Madhikari, it is actually very important to have sufficient knowledge to discriminate between what's pure and what's impure.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, preachers, they don't know, and then they, you know, they mix things, actually.
It's very bewildering to the audience. Yeah. You can mix things or can get distracted by, you know, in other words, we're trying to be accommodating, so then sahajiyas and, you know, how you say, caste Goswamis and smart the brown, we're mixing them all in and everybody's one big happy family, you know, so then that becomes a problem also. So they can't, if you can't discriminate, then the point is you have to know what is useful and what's not, right? In other words, that they're chanting the holy name, they have faith in Lord Chaitanya, at least, you know, seemingly they say, that's nice, but their approach on their concept of sadhana and all that, that's weak. Right, that's not good, you know. Yes.
Can we say that those people are not sincere?
Basically, basically they're not sincere because the element, because this, the pure devotion is available, but it's more about the emotions and the show of that emotions and the community based on the show of emotions, rather than about chanting and discussing the pure name. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, that they want to be religious, but they don't actually want to surrender. Because it's not, they're not actually surrendered, because Krishna means that you're doing something of value. You know, it's just like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So there is no need to preach to
it? Not specifically. They said they come around, they take prasad, they take part in the kirtan, great. As long as they don't, you know, make too much of a show. Because then they are associating with those who are chanting the pure name. So then that will have an effect. So maybe in the future, they'll adjust. You know what I'm saying? But if they're going to come there and do their whole show or make a whole thing, they won't give class. There's no need. I mean, it's just like, we don't go to their program and give class, so why would they come to our program and give class? So, like, no, but it's not fair, they're here, and he's such a major person in there, yeah, but so what? You know, let him go to another group. You know, they won't, let him go, you know, give class with the smartest. They won't care. You know what I'm saying? It's like this whole thing of just, no, we're not open. It's who's open? Right? You have your particular philosophy, you have your line, and that's all. It's just the way it works. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
I think Maharishi don't have any system for education, a Gurukul system.
They don't. No, it doesn't. It doesn't seem to be an important element, because the point is you're not studying scripture, you're not getting into the ritual. Though they have their own rituals, but like that, though, so it's not important. So then, there's no need of an education, right? Because it's all about engaging the senses in so-called Krishna Lila. But the problem is you're Krishna, so then. You know, probably the less you know, the better. If you actually know something, you wouldn't do it. Because in the Bhagavatam, I think Sukadev Goswami gives a warning for anybody who imitates Krishna like that. It doesn't work out well for them. The first and foremost point is that one must understand the prime importance of bhakti yoga. The living entities in different species of life are undergoing different terms of engagement according to the fruit of actions and reactions. Right? So all the 8,400,000, one is in that species because of what he's done before. And it's just a matter of he's getting the opportunity to live through the results of that activity. But in the execution of different activities, one who secures some resources in bhakti yoga can understand the importance of service to the Lord through the causeless mercy of the Lord, as well as that of the spiritual master. Right? So secure some resources. So if he has some bhakti sukriti, then one can appreciate this. Right? If one doesn't have bhakti sukriti, he can't appreciate this. But this means in the pure line. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise anybody can make up anything. It's not enough that, you know, some common words are there, some other common things are there. It's right? A sincere soul is helped by the Lord through meeting a bona fide spiritual master, the representative of the Lord. Right? So if they're not meeting, means they're not sincere. Because the Lord's in the heart, so he knows what your mood is. Mm-hmm. So you want to be cheated, then you meet someone who will cheat you. Right, and if you want the real thing, then he'll put you in contact. By the instruction of the spiritual master, one gets the seed of bhakti yoga. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that the devotee sow the seed of bhakti yoga in his heart and nurture it by the watering of hearing and chanting the holy name, fame, etc. of the Lord. So why he gets the seed, he has to sow it. Why would he have to do that? Right? Means the point is that, you know, the element of automatic, but how is automatic? Automatic means you want it. It's something you desire. In other words, becoming part of the Sampradaya means a conscious commitment to it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right? That's what we're making the distinction between ordinary devotees and Sampradaya. Ordinary means they're somehow or another in connection with the pure devotees and are going along and don't mind doing the pure devotional activities, but they haven't committed themselves to it. When one commits oneself to it, one becomes sampradayic. Does that make sense? You know, like you have the person that comes to the temple and to the festival and they like to do things and they're very enthusiastic and do something and take prasad, but they're not technically sampradayic because they haven't committed themselves to the process. But they're a nice person, and you know, nice Bhakti Sukriti is there. If they do surrender, they'll be a nice devotee, but they haven't necessarily. You understand? Yes.
So if the person comes to the past 15 years, let's say, and is committed to the process, but still didn't get initiated formally.
But why not? You know what I'm saying? Why wouldn't they?
So they're not considered sampradaya.
I mean, on one sense it is, but on another sense you could just say is yes, but at the same time is why haven't they?
Issue.
Yes, but then that means that they're not fully committed to the process. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, there's you know, so many devotees there, so surely they can find somebody, but if they can't find anybody, then there's something wrong there. So it's the point is it's generally applied for, I mean, that would be a more of a unique case. There may be a few of those unique cases. I think every country has one. You know, Bach to somebody that every temple president has had in their temple because he's been around in the zone for like that 10 or 15 years, like that. But the general principle is those who, it's most applied to those who are born in devotee families, Brahmin families, these, you know, Goswami families, and that kind of thing, where they're in contact with bona fide devotional process, but they're only doing it because the family kind of does it. And they don't mind, it's just by association they're doing it. But they haven't necessarily committed themselves to doing it. Because technically when they take initiation, then you'd say they're sampradaya. But the point is if they're committed to the process, so that they would come to that point of initiation, then you would say that they're, you know. Yeah, well, in this, then they're really slow, that by that example. But like, let's say the children, it's that they do, and then sometimes by the 12, you know, 15, 18, then they're initiated. You know, does that make sense? You know, so the thing is they've come, but there's a difference there because there's lack of maturity. Then when that maturity comes, they see the necessity and then apply themselves and get initiated. Well, this person has seen the importance but hasn't applied himself to get initiated. Right? Because it's not that, because the initiation shows Krishna you're serious. Because, as Prabhupada's saying, Krishna and the spiritual master. A sincere soul is helped by the Lord through meeting a bona fide spiritual master. The Lord, important service to the Lord by the causeless mercy of the Lord, as well as that of the spiritual master. Because if it's just the Lord, then that's not enough. Because the sahaji is, you know, it's just the Lord. They have their gurus, but it's all about the Lord. So you have to see is that the spiritual master is important because his instructions are there. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
So for somebody who is not sampradaya devotee, is it possible that they chant Shuddhanam actually?
Means what? The general principle isn't means typically you see Shuddhanam at the Madhyama platform. Because a neophyte generally means the anartas and this and that, so there's a mix. So when anarta nivriti is accomplished, generally then one takes up that pure chanting. Then one develops a taste. But we always have to remember, so let's say those born into devotee families, then they have been practicing devotional service before. Right? So the more kind of serious the family, generally the more serious the soul was in their last life. You know, means if they follow in the same kind of example. And so then they have that element, but it's just a matter of coming to that maturity. You know, depending what is that's distracted them that they didn't go back to Godhead, that they took birth again. So whatever distracted, when that becomes adjusted enough to focus, then it would be taken up. So the general principle is that one who's initiated and comes to that mature platform, that would be Shuddhanam. Because we're saying devotees who are initiated are still chanting Namabhas, or like that. So why wouldn't that be the case with uninitiated people? You know what I'm saying? But it's not that there's not, you know, necessarily moments of pure chanting. It's just whether that's consistently pure. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, nice kirtan, they're verbally absorbed, and so they advance very nicely. But then that should make them more committed to the process. Does that make sense? Because, you see, in this, you want to be very, very careful of, you know, as we were discussing before, what are the reactions to certain things. Because if you say you don't have to be initiated to chant Shuddha Nam, then the thing is people say, well, then what's the need of initiation? But the point is initiation shows that you're serious about the process of surrendering to the Parampara, because when you get back to Godhead, there is a hierarchy there, right? There is who's in charge and who's getting what done, because you have management there, it being a secondary element, but it has to be done. It's not a matter of if you feel like it or not, or when the mood strikes you, or you know, like that, maybe another time, or can't you ask someone else? Or, no, it's just like that. It's time to do something, it has to be done. You know what I'm saying? So that's just a secondary part. So then the management element is there. So if one has problem with authority, one has problem with authority. You know what I'm saying? It's not that one has problem with authority here, but when one goes back to Godhead, one won't have problem with authority. One will still have problem with authority. Right? You just don't have your conditioning. You don't have the negative, but you don't have the positive. You know what I'm saying? It means someone has problem with authority. So there is no positive development, but there's a negative. Okay, so if they give up the conditioned nature, go back to Godhead, they remove that negative element because it's not specific, because that one did this and my father did that, and then, you know, my school teacher did this, and then, you know, that fireman did that, and, you know, on and on and on, you know, like that. So those are gone, but he doesn't have faith in authority. So then how one will take shelter of the eternal associates of Krishna? You understand? Now you're working on the platform of liberation, because you don't have the conditioning, things can move quicker. Right? But still, you have to get through that. You still have to work that out. But because you don't have anything negative, it will be quite easy. So you're in a neutral state, so you come in contact with the positive, it'll move forward. But it's not automatic that you'll just automatically go back to then you're on the platform of prema. No, you have to develop the prema. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's just the thing. So why is it someone's not taking initiation? So the time of death, what are they going to think of? Right? Because generally if you talk to them, it's not just a matter of they're just absorbed in chanting and serving the Vaishnavas and everything like that. You talk to them, you know, you have 2 to 3 hours of why they're not getting initiated. You understand? So what's on the consciousness? So what's going on the consciousness at the time of death? You know what I'm saying? Because their identity is, I'm the devotee who is not satisfied, I'm intelligent, and I look around and I'm not satisfied with the different things because there's this and there's that. Though I'm a devotee of Krishna, like that, but there's all these things, so I can't surrender. So I'm the guy that's intelligent enough that I don't surrender. That's an identity. So with that identity, why would you think of Krishna as his servant? And there's no such thing as I'm Krishna's servant without being servant of the devotees. You understand? So it's a major flaw. You know, everybody else is figuring out how to get initiated in a year or two. So why is it in 15 they can't figure it out? You know. Does that make sense? You know, so it should be able to be worked out. And if they can't work it out in wherever they are, they can go somewhere else and figure it out. You know, come to Gaur Purnima. There's lots of people here they can see. You know, like that. Find a website that's got everybody's lectures on it. Some, you know, like that. You know, start a quest.
Spiritual Master Wanted.
Yeah. There must be some place you can put advertisements. Maya Kapoor. Like that. Right? Yeah. So that was the thing, is because he was saying is that it's all about the mind. Perfect purification of the mind is made possible when it's fixed in the conviction of being the eternal servant of the Lord. But here is, how will you be the eternal servant if you're not the servant of the servant? So if you're not initiated due to authority issues, means you have a problem with, I'm okay with servant of Krishna, but not servant of the servant of Krishna. So then that means you don't actually have the spiritual identity. And so if you don't have the spiritual identity, that means when you go through the process of reasoning, at the end, when you make your final decision, it's not going to be about, necessarily in line with pure devotion, because the identity's wrong. Does that make sense? You may be a very nice person and this and that, or just don't have that drive or like that, but these are things that they need to work out. Why don't they have the drive? You know what I'm saying? Bilbo Mungal, now he had drive. Like that, you know. So that's why we read about him.
Right?
Huh?
The
Sahaji. Yeah, even they appreciate, right? Yeah. Yeah, but he didn't stay with the prostitute. After she told him that, it was kind of like, right. Okay. And then he went off and took in, he, you know, found a spiritual master and things like that.
He also poked his eyeballs out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, that's serious. you have to say that that's serious. Yes.
I've heard a comment from a devotee before. There was an issue with the spiritual master wasn't following, so let's say purely the process of devotional service, and he may have been deviating.
Oh, okay.
And he was giving instructions to the disciple, but the comment was that the disciple can actually, by respecting that notion of service and servitorship, can actually make progress, even though it's not a very good instruction, but just because of his faith, Krishna, even though the result materially may not be so great, but spiritually he'll still advance.
As long as what he's following, he's using his intelligence, and what he's following is that. In other words, if he has faith in that, he wants to surrender to Krishna, so Krishna will give proper instruction, then it can still work.
Mm-hmm.
It can still work, but that's why there's the association of the society of Vaishnavas,
mm-hmm.
because there's all that siksha instruction is there. Because one can learn something from someone who's not ideally situated.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like Chanakya said, you can learn religion or morality from an immoral person.
Mm-hmm.
Because the point is the immoral person knows the difference. And so they can tell you what is, because they're suffering due to the immorality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but they're attached to it, therefore they're doing it. So they can advise you how not to get involved. Mm-hmm. You can say, who is he to say? But he's actually a good one to say, because he knows it's not good.
Yeah.
Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
Once Jagrati Maharaj was telling how he, in New Vrindavan as a pujari, in that moment, his authority told him that now he should worship Jesus Christ and all, and just stated he accepted as authority. And said he went through that, and Krishna arranged that he was out of that, and he didn't get caught up into that. He didn't criticize authority; he just followed for that moment, and then
Krishna arranged that, because the point is Jesus is an authority. But the point is
no kids, only humble.
Okay, you're out here. Then it's been long enough. Because the point is that you're taking what the authority's saying. You'll benefit because you're following authority. The authority may not get any benefit because they're not giving good advice or following properly. Yeah. But if you are sincere in following authority, then you're actually sincere, then it will be adjusted.
No. Now it makes sense.
Okay. So then, is that?
Yeah.
So, but if you want to be cheated, then Krishna arranged that you'll get in contact with those who will give you instructions that are not good. You know, it's just like, I've heard stories of you know, an area where somebody gets distracted by something, some new age thing and this and that, and they get very much impressed. So, and they feel that it does something nice for them, or it changed their life. So they come back and tell everybody else who is in their circle of sphere of that. And within a few weeks, you know, half the temple or something disappears, right? Because they're all off, you know, being new agey and feeling good about themselves, you know? So the thing is they're looking for some way. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just, you have the spiritual master is having difficulty, and then he left, right? And then within a few weeks, the whole zone just kind of evaporated. But I know another zone where the spiritual master had left, and he went and lived in the yatra, and the yatra went on perfectly fine. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, that's just, you know, that's just him. That's his trip. You know? You understand? You know, he wants to do those crazy things that says, we're not doing those. You know, but in this other zone, well, he's doing it so then we can do it. You know, so it's just a matter of what you want. You're looking for an excuse, Krishna will give it to you. You want sincerity, Krishna will give it to you. So that's the thing. It's something, there's a higher power. But the point is you try to make it clear that it's pure devotional service, because the normal person can't necessarily discriminate. And you have the element is that someone could be sincere, but he could also get distracted. So you want to give him the opportunity of, you know what I'm saying? Persons don't know which way they want to go. So therefore, you give them the contact of pure devotional service, so then they go that way.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Can you say that lack of sincerity is the weakness of the mind?
Lack of sincerity is weakness in the mind? Yes, you could. Because then the mind is just wants something else.
Yeah, because then we can say that those who went away, for example, with the war or whatever, it just didn't have strong intelligence or whatever. And those who didn't, we can say that the mind may want to go, like for...
No, well, the zone I'm talking about is they would. Who'd want to go with that guy? You know,
that's different.
Like that. You know, it's good to have around, hang around with. You know, like that. That, you know, who'd want to? Are you kidding?
So maybe it's not intelligent.
No, but you'd have all those different elements, because the point is you have various aspects. But it's just weakness. You know, as we were. Where is that in here?
Mm-hmm. The Anartas.
Yeah. Okay, we had illusion about one's original position, illusion about the nature of the Lord, illusion about sadhana and prema bhakti, illusion regarding subjects unfavorable to Krishna. So you'd have those aspects. So illusion would be there from the conditioning. And then weakness of heart. So then attachment to objects not related to Krishna. You know, so that could be there if you're taking it, okay, the person is, you know, less, you know, more innocent. You know, like that. But they may be very attached, they don't know the philosophy very well, or they don't know what actually is favorable and not favorable. Right? And then you have the asat Krishna, right? Desire for material objects, liberation, right? Nice, you know, heavenly comforts, mystic powers, you know, these kind of things. So you just combine that, and it's just depending on what it is, and you get what you're looking for. Okay, the living beings in different species of life are undergoing different terms of engagement according to their fruit of actions and reactions. But in the execution of different activities, one who secures some resources in bhakti yoga can understand the importance of service to the Lord through the causeless mercy of the Lord, as well as that of the spiritual master. A sincere soul is helped by the Lord through meeting a bona fide spiritual master, the representative of the Lord. So here, sincere soul is helped. So that person is someone sincere, then even though they come in contact with something weird, somebody else will, you know, get them someplace less weird. Yeah. By the instruction of such a spiritual master, one gets the seed of bhakti, bhakti yoga. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that the devotee sow the seed of bhakti yoga in his heart and nurture it by the watering of hearing and chanting the holy name, fame, etc., of the Lord. The simple process of offenselessly chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord will gradually promote one very soon to the stage of emancipation.
Gradually and very soon.
Yeah. Gradually and very soon. Oh, it means it's not like you just, you know, chant one name and your head explodes. A light, shining light comes out. And then I go, That's super. And then everybody kind of moves away from each other, so somebody's head explodes and it gets all over you. And then you can tell his head exploded. If it was pure chanting, there's no flies, right? Flies come and sit, then it's not pure. But if it's pure, there are no flies. Okay. Soon to the stage of emancipation, that's offenselessly chanting. That'll bring one to emancipation, liberation. But the Shuddha Nam, that will bring you to prema. Right, so there's two aspects: getting out of the material world to the spiritual platform, getting from the spiritual platform to prema. So by chanting, both are accomplished. You don't have to separately endeavor, but we're just saying is it very quickly. There are three stages in chanting the holy name of the Lord. The first stage is the offensive chanting of the holy name, and the second is the reflective stage of chanting the holy name. The third stage is the offenseless chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Okay, so here he's putting the third stage, the offenseless. He's using that. So that means that offenseless stage will bring one to liberation, and that by continuing, you get one gets a taste, one gets attached, one will come to Baba, one will go to prema. Mm-hmm. Okay. In the second stage only, the stage of reflection, between the offensive and offenseless stages, one automatically attains the stage of emancipation. Right, because if one's offensive, then one's naturally involved here. But when that offensiveness is given up, then one is naturally liberated. Because you're chanting, so you're not on the material platform. You're on the spiritual platform. So, yes.
Does reflection here mean like introspective, or does it mean it's the reflection of the pure name?
I think it means the reflection, but it's not the pratibimba. Right? Like that. So this is another aspect. You have the or it means that this pratibimba has two aspects. One means the pratibimba meaning a improper reflection of the holy name that the Maya bodies and others may chant, that it appears that they have some ecstasy from chanting. Mm-hmm. Just like the Sahajiyas, the Maya bodies, they may show symptoms of transcendental ecstasy due to the chanting process. But it's not coming from the pure chanting. Yeah.
Right. Would this be the chaya, no less the shadow?
Well, generally the chaya means, I'm not exactly sure on how it's being there, because you get the idea that the pratibimba namabhas means this non-devotional chanting, while chaya namabhas is devotional chanting. But it's simply the shadow of the name. It's not actually that full manifestation of the name.
Yeah, I think they say because the shadows actually connected in reality to the object. They actually touch each other.
Yes. So therefore, that's why it works. Well, that reflection. So here how he's using reflection, I'm not sure how it means. Mm-hmm. Or it means the element of the reflection. It means now it's properly being done. You know, or does that make sense? You know, unless the pratibimba has an aspect where the devotional can be chanting, but it's still because of offenses it's there. And then when you move to the chaya, then that would be this.
Yeah.
So whether that aspect would be correct, you know what I'm saying, or if it's or if that aspect is the position, just the neutral state between namabhas and shudhanam. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It means there's no offenses or anything that would create the material element, but one still hasn't developed that attraction or attachment to Krishna on the other side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like nishta, it doesn't you don't have the taste, but you don't have taste for spiritual, but you don't have the taste for the material. Mm-hmm. But you're situated nicely in the spiritual, so by continuing with that, the taste develops. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get the idea that this is what's the position. Because Prabhupada sometimes calls offensive, offenseless, and pure. Mm-hmm. But here he's calling offensive, reflective, and offenseless. Mm-hmm. Right. So this offenseless, the idea, that's the pure name. Mm-hmm. Offensive is there, but the reflective, then exactly what that means, because there's always a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean? And in the offenseless stage, one actually enters into the kingdom of God, although physically he may apparently be within this material world. To attain the offenseless stage, one may be on guard in the following manner. Okay. So it could also indicate here, offenseless means when you're beyond anartas, but then that means fully beyond. Mm. In other words, there's the absorbed in anartas, then one basically being freed from anartas, but there's still something there. Mm-hmm. And then when one comes completely to that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that would indicate the neophyte, then the madhyama, then the uttama. So on the platform of bhava, that is fully anarta nivriti. Mm-hmm. So then one is in the spiritual world, even though one may be here. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But you do have the overlap, because it's mentioned that the asakti and ruchi, the taste and attachment for the Lord, that is bhava, but that's extended down into the madhyama platform. It's like the beginning of that. Just like bhava is the beginning of prema, so ruchi and asakti is the beginning of bhava. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it could also mean in this way, because most of these things have these overlapping meanings, because the same process is happening on all these different levels. Just like you can say the Kanistha and Madhyam is within conditioning, right? And then you're beyond conditioning, the liberated stage, within the first steps of bhava. But it's not until you get to the latter state of bhava, then that's dynamic, that it's going to bring one to prema. Right? Because that first state is just kind of neutral. You know what I'm saying? So you always have that point of the one negative, then neutral, and then the positive. Mm-hmm. So if the neutral is approached through the process of the positive, it will continue until it gets to the positive. Mm-hmm. Right? But if it's like the impersonalists, that they're following that neutral state as a goal, then you'll never go beyond it. And it's very difficult, because you're trying to attain that state, you know, just on your own power. While the others, you're attaining that state through the power of bhakti. Is that? Yes.
Practical question is, sometimes when you're going through a very hard purification moment, for example, there's so much service, you're exhausted, some of the anartas just come in front of you, you can see them. So you mentioned before, the technique would be just to let them go.
Basically, you have to be able to let them go, and you know, recognize, okay, they're there, whatever it is, but let them go, right? Rather than holding on to them, because generally anarta means it's an aspect of identity. Because if I'm the controller and enjoyer, your anartas are how you control and enjoy. So one has to give that up for I'm servant of Krishna. Does that make sense? You have to at least be aware of it. You know, then it'll either go away, or, you know, depending on how deeply needed it is, it goes away, or, you know, it'll take a little longer. Right? What is the term? Gradually. Very soon. Gradually means in your life just step by step, but if you're talking about eternal time, it's very soon. That makes sense. You know, it's like the kid in the back of the car. You know, after every 5 minutes, are we there yet? No. Another 3 hours. Are we there yet? It's like that.
Very soon can still mean 10 lifetimes.
Yeah, yeah. It can be. It can also be, you know, the recommendation is one. Prabhupada's point is it's so bad and the conditioning is so bad that you should shoot for one. Don't, you know, this whole thing, no, I'm too pure, it'll take me, you know, next life, like this and that. But the point is, are you looking forward to next life? Or what's the trip, you know? Oh, I'm so sinful, I'm so this. That means I'm so powerful that even bhakti doesn't have authority over me. I'm so unique and special. I'm so sinful. But somehow or another, you know, it didn't work that way for Jagai Madai. You know, and you're not going to get more sinful from them. You know, and bhakti worked for them. So.
Usually tell those people, what makes you think you didn't say that in your last life?
that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah, what makes you think you didn't already say that last life? Or the last few lives.
Yeah.
Okay.
They have
opinions
about it.
Go around his name. No. That's really taking your kirtan seriously. The kids. The adults have stopped. Okay, when we speak of hearing and chanting, it means that not only should one chant and hear the holy name of the Lord as Rama and Krishna, but one should also read and hear the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. So it's not only you're chanting, but you're hearing the scriptures, right? Because that's the whole point. The sahajiyas are only hearing. They're not worried about the chanting the scriptures so much. Means maybe the pastimes, but not the whole rest of the Bhagavatam. They're not interested in the philosophy. Primary practice of bhakti yoga will cause the seed already sown in the heart to sprout. And by regular watering process, as mentioned above, the bhakti yoga creeper will begin to grow. Right. So the primary practice is that element of surrender. Right. That having faith in Krishna is the primary element. Right. That shraddha is the primary element. Because that shraddha is that very beginning stage of bhava. Right? It starts from there and it matures into bhava, and then bhava matures into prema. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. By systematic nurturing, right? So systematic means that there's a process. You're following the rules given by the acharya, the process given by the acharyas. The creeper will grow to such an extent that it will penetrate the coverings of the universe, reach the effulgent sky, the Brahmajyoti, the Vaikuntha lokas, and above them all, Goloka Vrindavan, wherein the growing creeper enters and takes repose at the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. When one reaches the lotus feet of Lord Krishna at Goloka Vrindavan, the watering process of hearing and reading, as also chanting the holy name in the pure devotional stage, fructifies, and the fruits grow there in the form of love of God, are tangibly tasted by the devotee, even though he is here in this material world. Mm. The ripe
fruits.
Oh, because yeah, I went the ripe for the warning from Padma Purana. That's the ripe warning. Okay. What the ripe fruits of God are relished only by the devotees constantly engaged in the watering process as described above. So only those engaged in the proper process under the spiritual master, in other words, one is sincere by the grace of the Lord and has gained, that then means then they will, by that watering process, they'll taste the fruits of love of God. Because you have to grow the tree. It's not just automatic just because you're showing ecstatic symptoms. Static symptoms are the symptoms of an ecstasy, but the ecstasy is based on this devotional process.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's not that you can just do anything you want.
Yeah. Right? You can't use your artificial ripener to...
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if that's it. If you could stick this Hodges in a room with, what's that, carbolic acid, yeah, and see if they come out any more devotional or something like that. Right. Give them each a banana. When the banana's ripe, then they can come out and see if there's any improvement. But the working devotee must always be mindful so that the creeper which has so grown will not be cut off. Therefore, he should be mindful of the following considerations. Okay. Offense by one at the feet of a pure devotee may be likened to the mad elephant who devastates a very good garden if it enters. Right? Because elephants aren't that, you know, just by moving around, they knock things over. Right? Two, one must be very careful to guard himself against such offenses at the feet of pure devotees, just as one protects a creeper by all-around fencing. Right, so in other words, so two things is that you avoid the offense and you protect that garden. Right? It means you don't, if you don't want elephants in the garden, put up a fence.
Right. A good
fence. A good fence. Yeah. Very good fence.
Elephant proof.
Yeah. Three, it so happens that by the watering process some weeds are also grown, and unless such weeds are uprooted, the nurturing of the main creeper or the creeper of bhakti yoga may be hampered. So along with the devotional creeper, then the watering also waters these other things. Right? So then one has to be guarding to see, okay, what's pure devotion, what's not. What's not, pull it out. Leave the pure devotion. You know. But four, actually these weeds are material enjoyment, merging of the self and the absolute without separate individuality, and many other desires in the field of religion. Notice here, merging of the self and the absolute without separate individuality. Because merging the self and the absolute with a separate individuality, that's what Ramanuja is talking about.
Yes.
You know, so. Yes. You know, or we'll also mention that just the purpose of the devotee and the Lord is one. So it's on consciousness that it's one. So the one's merged in that way. Mm. So you can see it's just by the way he words it, it is very specific in the philosophy. We'll just say, oh, okay, because it's Mayavada. So as soon as we hear merged, then it's a problem. Because that's the main point, that it's merged without individual identity. So, and many other desires in the field of religion, economic development, sense enjoyment, and emancipation. Right? Just general enjoyment, right? The facility, this, that. These are just the general. It's always going to be karma and jnana, right? But within that details, you have to have dharma to get artha so you can get kama, but you also need dharma to get moksha. Right? So the general is karma and jnana, right? But this, but in specific, it will be through dharma, artha, kama, moksha. There are many other weeds, like disobedience to the tenets of the revered scriptures. Right? Revered scriptures means the scriptures are to be accepted as authority. They're not to be doubted. Like it's like... Like let's say the shastra means recommended shastra gives something that should be done or some perspective of that. You can ask how it works or how it applies. You know who it applies to, what situations, what's the reasons behind it, but you can't ask if it's true or not. Does that make sense? Because the scripture is always right. It's not a matter if it's true. Does that make sense? So you can ask all the who, what, why, when, how, you know, all those things, but you can't ask if. Does that make sense? Because the point is the scriptures are always correct. They're coming from the Lord. Now, how that applies to you in a particular situation, that one inquires into. But one inquires with that sincerity, wanting to know how to apply it, not whether it is applicable or not.
I think all the Vedas are authentic scripture.
Yes.
All the Vedas.
Everything, yeah. It's all. But the point is you have your duties. That's why Krishna says, perform your duties. So the duties, let's say, in the Brahmanas are followed by the brahmacharis, the vanaprasthas, the sannyasis. The vanaprastha may follow certain aspects if he wants to take the yajna with him,
yes.
You know, when he retires in the beginning. But generally, as time goes, he will also give that up. You know what I'm saying? So the point is everybody has their position. God consciousness, that's common for everybody. Right? Because the idea of what you're trying to get to is that in consciousness, that of the sannyas means just that everything in the world is connected to the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? But that means, as the brahmachari, under the the directions given by the spiritual master, as a grihastha, engaging the senses properly according to duty in the Lord's service. Mm-hmm. Right? So the vanaprastha, understanding what are the subtleties behind this. Right? Does that make sense? So all these, the mentalities, that's common. But the specific duties, that will be different. You know, so everything's authorized, but it's just a matter whether it's your duty or not. So a lot of them go away by just being Vaishnav. Because the point is, the Veda is there for the Vaishnavas, but for those who aren't going to accept the Vaishnav position, at least they're following a social system that makes facility available for Vaishnavas. Yes. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like now in Vrindavan. You know, one of the tailors who's, you know, one of the better tailors, now he's getting old and stuff like this. So he's just worried about volume rather than quality. So that means you can go there and make, you know, if you want to make something good, you can make a nice, you know, Western shirt. But to make a proper, you know, the Vaishnav shirt, then it is more difficult to find someone who can do it. You understand? Why? Because the culture has changed, right? So now before is that whether people are sincere or not, but the point is they're following that culture, so it makes the facilities available for the Vaishnavas very easy. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's the advantage that they're once following the culture, even if it's not. It just creates an environment that's natural for the devotees.
I heard one devotee mention that Patanjali only gave one asana, which was sitting down. And all these other exercises are modern. And I was a little doubt, they didn't know what to think. You know anything?
Well, what is the one asana?
It's sitting like the lotus
pose. Most of them are sitting. I mean, you have standing, you have sitting, you have lying down, you have rising up, walking by the way. You have all those ones. But what do you mean by?
I don't know. You just said one, sitting down. I couldn't figure it out. Like you said, all the others are just...
No, the point is you're supposed to sit in the lotus position. Okay? But the point is you have to be able to sit there permanently. Does that make sense? So why can't you just sit down permanently? What happens when you sit down and in the lotus position? What's the problem? Where does it hurt?
Everywhere.
Okay. Everywhere. Exactly. It hurts in the ankles, someone in the lower back, somewhere in this and that. So all these other asanas are to get everything aligned so you can sit in that one asana. So it's not that you have to do all these other asanas. The other asanas are just to make it so you can actually sit. Does that make sense? So you know, they come up with so many, it's called overthinking. It is called Patanjali Yoga. He's given the credit for all this, you know, all those things. It means there's 8,400,000 asanas. Right? Of that, 100,000 is prominent. Right? You know, so the tsetse fly asana isn't so well known, you know. Or the, you know, Ebola asana. You know, these different, they're not so, you know, probably not so easy to do. There's probably very subtle differences between it. How, you know, holding your finger, you move it from here to here is the difference in the asana. You know what I'm saying? So, but they have effects. And so they make it so that you get the back aligned, you get the things in order, all the organs in order, everything, because you have to be able to sit there. You know, you can't sit there and then sneeze, you know, so you have to get rid of all these other problems. Does that make sense? So, the point is, you're trying to get to that asana, but to do that. You have to practice the others, whichever set you need to get to that. Is that my sense? Yeah. Okay. There are many other weeds, like disobedience to the tenets of the revered scriptures, unnecessary engagements, killing animals, and hankering after material gain, prestige, and adoration. 6. If sufficient care is not taken, then the watering process may only help to breed the weeds, stunting the healthy growth of the main creeper, and resulting in no fructification of the ultimate requirement, love of God. Because the ultimate requirement, what their soul needs, is love of God. So if one's not careful, then it will. If you're just chanting and going through the motions, not really watching what's going on, then the process is the weeds will grow. The creeper won't be growing. The creeper is growing, but how does it grow if there's so many weeds? So you have to be careful and pull out the weeds. Mm-hmm. Then the creeper will grow very strongly. Mm-hmm. 7. The devotee must therefore be very careful to uproot the different weeds in the very beginning. Only then will the healthy growth of the main creeper not be stunted. 8. And by so doing, the devotee is able to relish the fruit of love of God and thus live practically with Lord Krishna, even in this life, be able to see the Lord in every step. Right, so you can see the Lord everywhere and everything. So, yeah.
So then sometimes, you know, people complain we have no taste and this and that. Actually, it's not a taste of the of devotional creeper, it's a taste of an artist and going around.
Yeah, I mean, that's, they have a taste in something. Living Eddie has to have a taste in something, so it's either for Krishna or for Maya. You know, so some aspects Krishna may be there, some aspects Maya may be there, but the point is if those aren't pulled out, the elements of Maya, then they'll grow.
Yeah, because, you know, it's also mentioned bhukti, you know, it's offered as if some taste is there.
Why has one come here? One's come here for not getting devotional taste. So therefore, then, that's what's offered. You know, it's like if you always go to the same restaurant, order the same thing, and when you walk in and the waiter, if they know you, say, so the regular, you know, like that. But then the point is you have to give up the regular. You have the chanting process. You know, does that make sense? In other words, Maya just, oh, so the regular, you know. The regular bhukti-mukti siddhi kamika, you know, like that. You don't want to be too peaceful, right? You know, get boring. Right? So therefore, everybody's not peaceful. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yes.
The Yeti said the walking devotee means in the first line, no less. Before this point, he said the walking devotee. It indicates that there is no same page.
Oh, but the working devotee must always be mindful. Working means he's working in Krishna consciousness. He's making the endeavor.
Is to be more aware. More
it means, whatever. Engaging body, mind, words in the Lord's service. So he's endeavoring to do that. So in other words, he's applying himself to the devotional process. But what he's saying is in applying oneself, we have to be careful of offenses, and you have to be careful of weeds.
Yes.
So offenses to the Vaishnavas, that's the most dangerous, so therefore one has to build a fence to avoid, you know, that. Means make it very clear that one doesn't offend devotees. So then, after that, then everything else, all the other weeds, then you can worry about. In other words, if you're taking these 16 weeds that are there, then Kutinati is the most dangerous. The other 15 are the weeds.
Yes.
Right? In other words, Kutinati is not specifically a weed. It's the mad elephant.
Yes.
Right? He may have some friends, but I think it was theirs that had what is it? enviousness, you know, I'm sorry, it's sort of the, how you say, would work quite well along with deceitfulness. You know. So, I mean, they all support each other. But, you know, they're good friends. Yeah. They've been together for a long time.
All right. I've had the experience of being with devotees and we analyze the problems of our society and you end up on the fault. And then the serious goal is rooted. And one of us had the idea to start actually praising the devotees and then it just changed.
Very good. Yeah, because that's the whole point is that the faults, those are, means, why is one within the material sphere unless there's faults? But the point is, devotional service is about what you're doing right in connection to Krishna. Right? Because we're taking it, if there's a fault, then it can't be devotional service. So what does that mean? Devotional service is dependent upon karma. Right? And of karma, it has to be good karma. And of good karma, it's not good karma as defined by dharma. It's good karma as defined by artha. Right? Because how many are sitting around and discussing actually Dharma Shastra when they're finding fault? Right? Yeah. So it's generally something to do with, you know, modern political or ethical or economic. It's all artha. It's not dharma.
So when we start praising, we shift to dharma, right? Because the praise is dharma. Yeah.
That, well, actually you shift to transcendental, because then you're appreciating the Vaishnavas. But that's Sanatana Dharma. That's the actual position of the soul, to praise and like that. So that's better. Because we work at, if there's something wrong, then it's all wrong. No, that part may be wrong. What about everything else? So first look at what else is there. Then you probably find out there's most of it's good. And then there's a weakness here, and if they correct that weakness, then it would make all this other good stuff go nice. But we tend to sideline the good, and just that's only there, and that's all there is. And that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So by doing, one is able to relish the fruit of love of God. And thus live practically with Lord Krishna, even in this life, and be able to see the Lord in every step. So, and so by doing means you have to have been a character of the offenses and picking out the weeds. Right? Now, let us go back to the point of the Sahajya, you know, because that's the section that we're in here. Now, the Sahajya, they're saying here that the advanced person is engaged in all kinds of nonsense, but when a kirtan is there, then they you know, are the most practiced and best at rolling on the ground in ecstasy and all this and that, right? And so for the Vaisahajya, therefore, that's where you actually tell their position. But here Prabhupada's pointing out is, okay, so they're saying don't criticize. Okay, fine, don't criticize. But the problem is you don't pull out the weeds, you don't taste love of God. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so even if you don't criticize, but still, those are obstacles. You can say, but how can you have pure love and anarthas at the same time? To that degree the anarthas, to that degree that pure love is developing. And when there are no anarthas, and there's no other neutral elements, it's only purely positive, then it's pain. Does that make sense? Yeah. The highest perfection of life is to enjoy life constantly in the association of Lord. And one who can relish this does not aspire after any temporary enjoyment of the material world via other media. Mm-hmm. Right. So in other words, once one's come to that, he's not interested in this. So that means that for the Sahajiyas, why would they be, they're aspiring after temporary enjoyment in the material world and using that as the media to serve the Lord. But if you have that connection with the Lord, the direct connection to his name, form, qualities, pastime, why would you do that? Right? So that's the point. So therefore their position is not strong. You can say, seem sentimentally strong, oh, don't criticize, don't this or that, it's all about the chanting. In one sense, it sounds good. But the point is you also have to be very, very careful that it's understood as, yes, that's there if the person is trying this and that, then you don't criticize. You know, they're sincere, that connection is there. But here, there's no connection. There's no problem. It's just a show. Like that. So one has to be very, very careful. Okay.
Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.